This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
How's it going? Welcome again. Another week of the Doc and the Guru. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. And, you know, I think like all of us, trucking along day by day and trying to treat each day as a new adventure and a new opportunity to try and pick up some skills. I think we're all learning technical skills, and but there's a lot happening behind the scenes, you know. And I think if you sort of get in and start doing your homework, you realize there's way more going on behind the scenes than I'd realize. This is by no means a dark zone. Stuff's happening. You've got to just get on top of it.
Mm. And I think a lot of it is an attitude. And I guess as people, you know, Gordon, I can't speak for you, but certainly myself, the ups and downs, you know, you have days that you're more positive and others that you're frustrated and you want to get back to, you know, the things that you knew and you want to do. So, yeah, you know, I guess, as you say, we've got to try and make the best. And hopefully at the end of it all, whenever that is, we'll come out better for it.
Yeah, and the things we want to do, I mean, we're going to talk about today because you're going to introduce our guest in a moment. I mean, and sport activities central to all of that. So I think as soon as we get some kind of lifting of that restriction and a chance to get out there and engage in our sports, whether it's tennis or cricket or golf, whatever the case might be, the better for all of us. Because it's the mental issue for me is being neglected in all of this. It's all very well controlling me physiologically, but mentally I need some kind of release as well.
No doubt. And as you say, in a sport is far more than just throwing a javelin or chasing a ball or going 70 laps around the track. It's all of that stuff. And our guest today, very interestingly, will chat about some of that stuff. Debbie, welcome. Debbie Braun, CEO and founder of Urus. Debbie, you and I know each other for a long time, and you're going to chat about two things that are very passionate and close to your heart. And one is lifestyle branding, and we'll get into that in a second. And the second one is the role of women, or perhaps the lack of women, in top sports administrative jobs in South African sport. So again, from our side, thanks for taking the time and welcome to the show.
Hi, Doug. Hi, Gordon. Well, thank you for having me. Yes, we're going to touch on two very key points today, and I feel passionate about both of those points, so looking forward to chatting.
Well, getting straight into it, Debbie, lifestyle branding, you know, it's a term that I don't know if a lot of people are necessarily familiar with it. So for our listeners out there who perhaps are not that affair with it, please, can you explain what is lifestyle branding and why do you feel it should be part of mainstream media and marketing?
Doug, lifestyle branding in basic terms is taking what we know of an existing brand and being able to grow that brand. And by growing it is really, for example, taking a product, i.e., let's focus on rugby, seeing we're discussing sport, a franchise, and in the past where they were positioned solely as, say, a Sharks brand or a Bulls brand or Western Province brand, Stormers, it's now been identified that by trying to take that brand and grow it, and allowing that brand to penetrate right across the market, from kids to teenagers to women to men. The fan base grows, taking the brand even further, involving them in cycling, getting Sharks players involved with golf days and charity days, taking it into lifestyle activities. And by doing that and introducing an actual brand and taking them across board and positioning them in what we do in basic life generally, is adding monetary value to the actual brand and adding more worth to it and growing it at the same time. I believe it should be in the mainstream marketing structure, and then the process and the budget of those marketing structures will encompass a new age approach and thinking, and enhance our understanding and drive of lifestyle brand positioning.
So, yeah, I guess, so, you know, if I look back at sort of marketing terminology that I would use, it's almost a leveraging extension of that brand. So it's taking the brand into off-field. It's not just the 80 minutes or the 90 minutes in the case of a football game, but you're saying it's becoming part of the mainstream sort of landscape. And I mean, South Africans are quite brand conscious by and large. So why do you think that this hasn't happened yet?
Well, South Africa basically has been very brand conscious. They, for example, they've embraced, SA has embraced and bought into international brands. And I believe that they are conscious of those labels and brands internationally. However, when it comes to our own brands, we need to apply the same enthusiasm and consciousness. Saying this, our brands need to be humble enough and look at the processes that have made the international lifestyle brands successful. They need to embrace those and modify them to suit our requirements and needs. By taking this approach and having a look at the success of the international brands, we can accelerate our branding opportunities and then make great inroads in a very short period of time. But I believe we have to start being really serious about our own local brands, not just the international ones.
Yeah, just to pick up on that, I mean, it's been interesting to watch the information flow on during the COVID lockdown, and looking at brands and branded trends. And the issue of brands with purpose seems to have emerged as a very, very strong trend. And for me, if I look at the box and I look at their behavior during COVID and what's been done with the World Cup team, it's fantastic to see how the box have become a brand with purpose in terms of the value they're unlocking in the community, the engagement. It's been extraordinary. And I know you have kind of a dual lens here. You have the branded lens plus your interest in sports and sports administration. It seems to me, if I look at other brands, global brands like Man United, if they're not actually playing in a stadium, they don't have a purpose. They look abysmal. They have no glamour. They have no flair. Nobody's got an interest in them. So it's intriguing to see, will we go back to sporting brands the way we did, unless they have a purpose? And maybe I need to be in Manchester, or I need to be in Liverpool. Maybe that's what I'm missing. You know, I'm not there. For me, it's something I watch on TV. But, you know, local brands. And 1995, you know, the play in the last couple of days about, you know, the celebration of 1995 World Cup win, again, has made me realize that the Box are a brand with purpose. And I'm going to segue this, you know, somewhere in this conversation to, is that part of the problem with the Proteas as a brand? They don't seem to have a purpose anymore the way that the Box have for us.
Gordon, look, you've certainly hit the nail right on the head. Yes, the Box, I think, with a lot of key players, with Captain Garcia Kulisi, I mean, he's been phenomenal in this COVID. There's been a lot of activity of what they've been doing, and his drive and just the whole spirit. I think we often say the geus, and that certainly has come out quite strongly. If we have a look at, and again, looking at the international brands, even Bayern Munich, Liverpool, all those, you don't hear much now. You certainly don't. However, I think what my point of reference was more on taking the brand and getting it to a point where it's a serious money spinner. And I think just launching into that aspect, but not playing down the importance of purpose, once your brand is able to stand out, like, let me use Liverpool for an example. They, whether they won or whether they lost, they always had a fan base that stood by them through thick or thin. Unfortunately, my sort of perception was with the box, were when they weren't playing well, everybody was so very critical. When they won, well, I don't need to add anything to that. But we, I think we need to build the brand that we very much are behind our teams. Any South African sporting team, rugby, soccer, whatever it may be, you know, whether they are playing badly, whether they win, we need to be behind them. We need to give that value to it and give them a sense of purpose. So they're giving us a sense of purpose. But I think the fans and the people and the sponsors and all of that need to actually also add purpose and give back to those teams and make them want to be there and add value. So that's just my take on purpose.
That's a brilliant observation, and I think, yeah, that's the rights and responsibilities. If you want to be a fan, you've got some responsibility as well. I really love that perspective, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I guess nobody can tell you exactly how the world's going to look after this, you know, the crisis that we're currently in. And maybe, you know, maybe it will be good. And as you say, the people are yearning so much, not just for the game itself, but to be proximate to the Euros, that big stadium experience, you know. It's just that whole aura of that we're missing, you know. You can get close to it with approximation models and play e-games and all the rest of it. And there's definitely a place for that. But certainly, you know, Debbie, there's a place for the real thing, you know, standing in the queue, getting in, the excitement in kids' eyes. So, and who knows, you know, maybe people will rediscover their love and their purpose both ways, you know, both, I say both ways, not just the fan and the player, but also the administrators, and we'll get onto that in a short while.
Yeah, I mean, everybody remembers, I can certainly remember the first game of rugby I ever went to watch with my father at King's Park. I can't remember the last game of rugby I watched on TV. So, I mean, yeah, eventing is crucial. And so, ultimately, you know, the survival of sporting brands has got to be built around the desire for me to be in there and join in the passion of the event itself, not just watch the team.
Hmm. I mean, Jimmy.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I mean, just to move into the next part of it. So, I mean, your other big passion is women in sports administration in particular, not just as a player. But, you know, let's just talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's a funny time for the world at the moment. There's been very little sport. Some leagues have opened up and are opening up across Europe and some other parts. From our point of view, and we're going to talk rugby specifically, it's a challenge, you know. It's a challenge for us. Now, you recently put your money where your mouth is and you've applied for the now vacant CEO role for Western Province Rugby. Let's talk about that. Why did you do that, given the fact that there are very few women in top sporting administrative roles across the big sporting codes in South Africa? And what do you think you can bring to that role to make a difference?
Well, Doug, they always say, you know, if you embark on a journey of passion and you're able to call that your job, you never really work a day in your life. So rugby very much has always been part of my growing up, and I'm extremely passionate about it. And I think you know that. You've witnessed a cold face of my excitement at rugby games. And it goes beyond that. I think having just analysed and had a look, and I won't talk about players per se, but let's stick to the administration. Looking around, and I try to identify and see where were there women in those structures. And but certainly not coming from it's an unfair and disadvantage. It's literally just sitting back and taking a hard look and saying, where are women out there in rugby, in sport in general, in senior roles here in South Africa predominantly? And I came up with a big fat zeros. And I thought, you know what, when the CEO position became available, chatting to a lot of people, also chatting to you, Doug, and everyone said, well, why don't you consider put your CV forward? And I thought my first reaction was, oh, you know, no, I'm female, would I be able to hold that down? I thought, damn it, yes. I'm qualified, I'm passionate about the job. I probably could bring a lot to the table with others that are in the organization and around, and knowing people that I do. I think rugby has to be done through people and done through fans and done through, I think with COVID, and where I'm going is that with COVID, it's actually put a bit of a different slant on things. It's actually made us regroup with people. And I think having the passion and having the knowledge that I've got, certainly to take on a challenge like CEO of Western Province Rugby, I would want to bring that passion into of encompassing people and bringing them together and actually taking fans and bring and involve them in the administration communication within the brand. And I believe I can do that. I believe I've got the skills, I've got the negotiation skills to do it, along with a lot of supportive people. So hence, I do believe that women should be making an inroad in the administration roles of sporting in general in South Africa. And hopefully I can be one of the first to do that. I think at my age, I've earned my stripes and I'm determined. And I certainly hope that it does work out.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Wonderful that you know, women seek high office in sport, and there should be no barriers. I'm sure they are. We'll talk about Raylene Castle and the hoops that she had to jump through in Australian rugby. But I'm just confused about how anybody could be passionate about Western Province rugby. But that's another story entirely.
I have to stop you there. I am very passionate about rugby. Western Province happens to be the area where I live in, and I believe you've got to start somewhere. Obviously, we won't go into talking about individual teams and who supports who. We'll just stick to Western Province needs a CEO.
But let's go back to Raylene Castle. I mean, you know, looking at the situation in Australian rugby, yes, they've run into tough times, but it seems to me that the whole COVID thing and the slowdown in Australian rugby, very, very convenient to blame Raylene Castle for this thing. And then, I mean, she resigned, I know that, but to my mind, she was just well and truly shafted. She was being excluded from board meetings. What's your view on that? That's high-profile sabotage of women's initiative in sport, to my naive way of looking at it.
Well, Gordon, I don't think it's naive. I think the truth is that Raylene Castle had numerous takes on her stepping down. And there's been a number of articles in the media, a lot of speculation. My view, however, I've really taken a lot of it out of the media coverage in Australia. And one of the interesting angles of one of these points that have been highlighted is that she should have been more open with regards to the financial results of the 2019 audited figures. She should have been more open to their members and the general public. They reckon that this lack of communication bred distrust in her ability. And with that, I think when people lose that trust, you do get sidelined, you do get pushed aside, and people doubt your capabilities. And the big question for me is it that she was sidelined because she was a woman, or was it the actual issue on hand? If a male had acted in the same manner, would he not also have been asked to leave, or would he not have resigned? Whichever it is, I don't know if it only comes down to her being a woman. A lot of people feel strongly that it is, but I hope that in the era that we find ourselves in, that it's more to do with the actual skill base and an actual situation more than being a female.
Is it maybe that she crossed codes? I mean, she headed up netball in New Zealand, you know. I mean, does each sporting code have an innate kind of ethos and a geus, was the word you used earlier? And if you don't get that, you can't just run it from an academic business perspective. You've got to understand the geus of the players, of the fans, of the community that it serves. Should she have stuck to netball? Should she have stuck to netball?
No, look, I think, Gordon, you know, there's the age-old thing. If you have a look at people, I mean, you have a look how many great coaches. I mean, they came out of different sectors. They may have been teachers, and then they took on teaching rugby. Should they have stuck to teaching? If they go on to be a CEO of Western Province, should they have rather remained being if something goes horribly wrong? I mean, we can, you know, go backwards and forwards on the subject matter. I think she was appointed, and she was obviously appointed by a board, and they must have seen must have addressed the criteria of the job and felt that she was the one to do it. Down the line, you know, one can't, when things go wrong, try and point out what should have or could have. They appointed her, and they also have to be accountable. They should be held responsible, and people should ask the question, if, you know, why did it end this way? And I believe there should be more open communication on it, because it's just so much speculation that she was a woman, that she stepped down because of X, Y, and Z. It's a very gray area. It's a very public position, and therefore I believe it should be very clear communication to fans and investors within the rugby union there.
I think, Debbie, I agree. And I think, you know, even if you look in the corporate space, you know, often you'd find a high-profile CEO stepping down, and I'm using that in inverted commas, and there's a lot of pressure that goes on behind it. But you've got to look at the recruitment process that went in. You know, today with, you know, everything being open, and you can do, and I've been party to it, and I've worked in companies where, you know, a few years ago, a very prominent CEO got one of the biggest payouts, and this is all in the public domain, in South Africa, and he lost 11 months in the job. So now you got to ask the question, well, who employed him? You know, he didn't employ himself. So I think, as you're saying, hopefully it's not a male-female thing, but more competency and the responsibility across the board. Debbie, you talk about communications and the one union, and again, you said you didn't want to get into one union against the other. It's really just from my perspective, I'm looking at Jake, and you and I both know him, Jake White. He seems to be doing some stuff at the Bulls, and I think the one thing Jake does know is how to put a winning team together. You know, he's been securing players. He's lost one or two in the merry-go-round, securing some coaching staff. But at least they, and also most importantly, is they've just recently now appointed their CEO, because they were also, but they were only without a CEO literally for a week or two. Again, difficult for you, but I mean, can Province take a lesson out of that in terms of communicating and at least telling people where they are with their CEO, specifically in such a big year for Stormers Western Province Rugby, you know, with the big move off the park, of course, to the Cape Town Stadium?
No, absolutely, Doug. Look, yes, it appears that the Blue Bulls have been very prominent in their media communication. I do believe that this is a vital point. That Western Province Rugby should pick up on this and embrace that they need to openly communicate what their strategy is at present without an actual CEO in place. Communication is a vital necessity for any brand, and by communicating, they'll be seen as inclusive and open. I think it's just been too quiet, and very clearly I think they should take the lead from the Blue Bulls. Jake certainly come on board. The move with the new appointment of the CEO there certainly happened within days. And, you know, they seem to be having a stable front, and that's what's been projected in the media. And at the moment, I think Western Province Rugby is sitting with everybody wondering what's going to happen. So, yeah, cut and dry. Western Province should take note and hopefully follow in suit of what the Blue Bulls have done.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, part of the plan going forward with fresh eyes and fresh perspectives is the growth of the game amongst female participants. I mean, I've really enjoyed watching the Proteas ladies cricket. I thought it was brilliant. It's a different, you know, it's not a compromise on the male game. It was a different game. It was more finessed. It had a different kind of flavor to it. It's like watching ladies and men's tennis. You can't compare them. Each one is a different skill set. So do you see an opportunity going forward to really build women's sport in this country? I mean, it's bizarre for me to sit and look at the recent decision on US women's football, where they've just lost a court case on the issue of equal pay relative to the men's football side. I'm just checking my calendar to see what year I'm living in. I mean, Megan Rapinoe is an unbelievable football star. She outshines any other single American male footballer that I can think of, and yet she's being penalized. So what's the game plan there? I mean, are you going to build that into the thinking?
Look, absolutely. I think the age-old thing is one has to have a strategy. And from there, base your roadmap forward. And one of those things is to naturally bring more women into not only administration roles, but into various sectors, i.e. refs, players, et cetera, et cetera. You're quite right. I mean, if you look at the soccer players internationally and the US, they're phenomenal. Just across, I've watched soccer the last number of years, from German teams to English teams, and they absolutely superb. I sometimes say some of their games actually look stronger than the male counterparts. And I shouldn't be saying that, should I? But realistically, they're out there. But I think on that, just to touch on that pay dispute that's been going backwards and forwards, unfortunately, again, it's speculation, but I think where it was overturned is mainly because of what agreements were signed in the pay sectors, the females and the men. The US women's soccer team, basically the female players agreement allows the women to be compensated largely through salary guarantees with additional opportunities for performance and base bonuses. However, on the men's team, players do not earn salaries, but only bonuses, and therefore the men are only paid for when they play. So their negotiations are entirely different when it comes to the actual salary agreements that they sign. And I think that's one of the areas that one's got to say. If you have a national team or you have players in general, they have to be, well, their terms have to be on the same basis. It can't be different. And I think that's where the whole dialogue comes in now on the US team, the soccer teams.
So just one sort of wrap-up question as we drift towards the back end here. Looking at young women, I mean, it saddens me that people drop out of sports for which they have a passion because they're not going to be world beaters. What would you say to young women who are not going to be number one golfers in the world, number one tennis players in the world, that you can still exercise your passion by engaging in the sport in other areas, like being a sports official, like being an administrator? What kind of encouragement would you give to young women in particular, and just young athletes generally, about staying in the game and exercising your passion, even though you aren't number one in the world?
I think it's really being true to themselves, not allowing previously disadvantaged situations to set them back. I think, especially in South Africa, well, maybe throughout the world, there's always been people that are disadvantaged. And we've got to get to a stage where we almost put that behind us and say, you know what, let's just go out there and be the best version of ourselves. And I don't mean that in a corny way. It's don't give up. It's the same with what I'm doing. At my age, having gone down a very different road, I'm embracing a possible challenge where a lot of people are saying, you're mad, why do you want to do that? I believe I can make a difference. And I think to any young person, if they honestly believe that they can make a difference, it doesn't matter which division, from an active athlete to an administrator to a coach to whatever they choose, they should really just embrace it and run with it. And we will ultimately have leaders, and we'll see women flourishing. And that's my solid take on women in the future.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Debbie. And absolutely, you know, I think people have got to look at the opportunities that are available and sometimes make the opportunities. Now, a lot of the times it's about finding an opportunity and building on it or creating something. Debbie, as we get to the close, I mean, from my side, I'm gonna close off now and leave Gordon to close the show down. But I mean, just how do people get hold of you if they want to get hold of you? Say there's a young lady or young guy, for that matter, wanting to find out about lifestyle branding on the one side and sports admin. Do you have an email? Are you on social media?
Yes, I am on email. We have a website presence, URS has got. So people can certainly get that. Shall I give you the website address?
Yeah, if you can, yeah.
It's www.urus.co.za. Okay. And email address is debbiebraun@urus.co.za.
Okay, great. Thanks. And again, you know, as Gordon and I always say to our listeners every week, this is about, you know, engaging people, getting everyone involved in the conversation. And please, if you want to reach out to Debbie, she's giving you her details, do that. And also, you know, if you have other guests you'd like on the show, if you have ideas, things you like, things you don't like about us, please just get a hold of us. You know, write to us, reach out on social platforms. We're very keen to accommodate it and try and make the show even better. So from my side, Debbie, I'm going to say thank you very much. And I'm going to leave Gordon to close out.
Yeah, Debbie, thanks once again for the time. That's really insightful and intriguing. And it's really encouraging to see these developments. And as Doc said, to our listeners out there, please subscribe, listen in, submit any questions. And, you know, if you didn't get Debbie's details, that's fine. Contact us. We'll put you in touch. But let's keep the dialogue going, because I think if there's one thing we love in this country, it's the feeling of being a winner. And I would love to see that winning feeling extends beyond the one side that seems to encourage us in that regard. So, Debbie, thanks for the time. To all of you out there,
thanks,
we'll see you soon. Ciao.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.